Hey, hello, and happy new year. This is a brand new Asterix, our podcast. I'm your brand new host, Ethan, and with me is your brand new buddy, Coogee. What's up, Coogee?
Happy new year.
We're actually the same people, but it is a brand new year. Is it too late in the year to keep saying that?
Nope. It's our resolution to be new.
To be new and
yeah,
keep reminding people it's a new year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back after a classic long layoff, but we're here to talk about a wonderful movie from 2015 called Inside Out.
Inside Out.
From Pixar. We're the Pixar people, if you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. If you didn't know.
Yeah, I always wonder, I assume people start from the very first podcast and listen all the way through, but I guess people don't do that.
I mean, I'm a completist, so I would definitely do that, but it's hard sometimes.
I'm also a completist, so maybe that's why I assume other people are too.
They should be.
Yeah.
Which will be complete.
That's our advice to you. Be a completist. So let's complete this pod by running through this movie, touching on our likes or dislikes, our do's or don'ts, hit all the deets from A to Zeets.
Sure thing.
Let's get you ready?
Yeah. What movie was this? Inside Out?
Yeah, I already said that. Inside Out. All right. 2015, Pixar, directed by Pete Docter.
What a great guy.
What a doctor.
He is great.
He also directed Monsters, Inc. and Up previously.
Other great movies. Well, yeah, great movies.
Yeah. They're all good movies. Except for Cars, too. he also did the screenplay with Meg LaFave and Josh Cooley. And he also originated the story, too, but with some help from Ronnie Del Carmen. So he hit it from all angles, Pete Docter. This is his baby.
Little baby.
It's good from him.
And some all-star voice acting.
All-star voice acting. Probably the best best collabo we got since Bug's Life, right?
Yeah.
In terms of just real bangers from top to bottom.
Yeah. We got Amy Poehler. Great. Got that lady from The Office. Great.
Phyllis Smith.
Got Richard Kind, he was in every movie, pretty much.
Yes, also in A Bug's Life.
As Bong Bong.
As Bong Bong.
Method of course, favorite. If you're gonna cast anger, why not make it Louis Black, one of my favorite comedians?
Yeah, so to get the characters right with these actors, we had Amy Poehler was Joy, Phyllis Smith Sadness, Richard Kind Bong Bong, Louis Black Anger, Bill Hader Fear, Mindy Kaling Disgust. We'll get to Disgust because I know where you're going. I'm right there with you. And then a couple short roles here. Diane Lane as the mom and Kyle MacLachlan as the dad. And then main kid, Riley, was Caitlin Diaz.
I thought I'd recognize Kyle MacLachlan's voice, but I didn't.
I don't know if I would have if I didn't know it was him.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he was putting on a dad voice, I don't know. Well, he kind of has a dad voice.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good dad voice. I definitely didn't recognize Diane Lane, even though I knew that was her voicing it. I don't think I really would recognize her voice, out of a crowd. But most everyone else was pretty spot on.
And my favorite other bit part was Bobby Moynihan, which he was in another one too, and Peter Sagal.
Peter Sagal? Who's Peter Sagal?
The guy from NPR.
Oh.
he played like a very small role.
All right, if we're getting into small roles, then there's also Paula Poundstone.
Paula Poundstone, yeah.
Flea, who I honestly don't really remember who he was. Frank Oz was in there as well. And
I don't know what Frank Oz sounds like.
Yeah, if he's not Yoda, yeah. I don't know his real voice is. And we had a Rashida Jones in there also. Those are our minor parts.
I didn't realize that. I feel like I should have known Rashida Jones.
Yeah. Girls' emotions.
Flea just sounds dirty, I think. I don't know what he sounds like.
Who sounds dirty?
Flea.
Oh.
You think he was shirtless in the recording booth?
I don't think he owns any shirts.
Yeah, and I don't think he can.
I think he's a smart man for it. Think of how much money he's saved on shirts alone.
You know what? It's a valid point.
But he gets kicked out of a lot of restaurants, though. No service.
Maybe he takes like the courtesy shirt that they give you.
He's right. The restaurants have nice courtesy shirts.
Yeah, they should.
Like when you go to like a Blazers only restaurant, and they give you like a loner blazer, like in that episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, they should do that with. They should do that with just for Flea only, though.
Reserved for Flea.
Yes, break glass in emergency when Flea's here.
So rounding out the rest of the stats we got here, music by Pixar alum Michael Giacchino.
Giacchino.
Is it Giacchino? You know,
it is. You're mostly Italian. You should know this.
I looked up a YouTube how to pronounce his name, and then I didn't actually listen to that YouTube. But wasn't he on a Marc Maron podcast this past year? Or am I making that up?
I don't listen to that podcast.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have beef with Marc Maron.
My wife loves it. Here we go. Hold on. Here's going to be the final answer. How to pronounce Giacchino.
Pronouncenames.com.
Oh, fuck. Cut that out.
Giacchino.
Giacchino. Interesting, Kuji.
Giacchino.
Giacchino is what YouTube says.
Yeah, Totino's. It's great.
Totino's. Michael Totino's.
Hey, he made a fortune on those little pizza pockets.
Yeah. Smart man. Wonder if he wears a shirt.
Very expensive shirt.
Speaking of expensive, this movie made a lot of expenses. Budget 175 mil, box office 160 mil, rounded up. Very successful movie.
Yeah.
Now, had you seen it prior to this endeavor?
I had not.
Me neither.
No, I didn't think so.
What does that say about us?
That we need to go see Pixar movies in the theaters, which we just did, so.
Yeah, we're back on it. And I'm going to see, I'll see Incredibles 2 in the theater.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll see Incredibles 3.
I'll see Toy Story 4 in the theater.
Yeah.
I can't remember what else is slotted to come out, but we're back on the wagon, baby. This one got a lot of buzz, for sure, when it came out. And I just kind of missed it. And I was like, I'll see it someday in the future when I start a ridiculous podcast for no reason.
Yeah, we should have seen it. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to get to any final judgment, but I think we both enjoyed it.
I'll go out on a limb and say that, yes, I enjoyed this. Very enjoyable movie. You did as well.
I did.
And, you know, we'll talk about what we enjoyed, what we didn't enjoy. Any other words to start us off with before we just dive right into the nitty gritty?
No, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So this movie, is pretty high concept, would you say?
Yeah, actually, well, I don't know.
It's definitely high concept because they spend the first 8 minutes trying to explain it before they even show the title card.
That's true. I feel like Black Mirror stole some stuff from this. I don't know if you've seen the most recent season of Black Mirror, but
not all of them.
A lot of crossover.
Oh, a lot of Pixar Black Mirror crossover, you say?
Which I feel like is rare. I don't think they often overlap.
I don't remember Pixar ever having any Prime Minister's Fuck a Pig on TV.
No.
Maybe I missed that one too.
That might be in Cars 3. We don't know. It'd be better than Cars 3, actually.
Yeah. It's the artistic equivalency.
I'd love to see the mayor of, like, Topeka, Kansas, bone a pig. I don't know. Instead of Cars 3.
So the conceit of this movie is that we are primarily in the brain of a child, and the main characters of this movie in her brain are her basic emotions, the personifications, the five of them, as we said: joy, sadness, fear, disgust, and anger. And the movie's pretty much focusing in on her growth, Riley, the child, but mainly a very tumultuous time of her life when her family moves. And she's kind of going through like almost puberty. When do kids hit puberty? Later than that. She's 11.
Yeah, it's like a couple years off.
Okay. Well, I guess they even allude to that at the very end of the movie.
They teased it, yeah.
But still, yeah.
They did just change the borders of when adolescence starts and ends. It actually ends more around 25, 26 versus 18, 19 that they previously thought.
Well, in our generation, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm still, still in puberty. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely in mental puberty. Still popping boners on the rando.
You know, is that a thing? Because I thought I had a problem.
No, it's definitely a thing.
All right, because it's annoying still. And I'm like, I thought I was over this body. But I guess not. Is that just like until you die or until your like dick stops working?
It's just to remind you that, it's there and it wants to get the job done.
That's true. He's just trying to give you a heads up, like, it'd be great, coitus.
Give you a heads up. I get it.
Ooh.
Oh.
All right, well, you know what? I think that makes you feel better. Anyway.
So we were about to, it sounds like, go in on something here. What's your take on the emotions they chose to personify? Good choice? Bad choice?
I mean, as I alluded to before, disgust is a strange choice, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like disgust is just a word. Like, I don't know. I was thinking about, like, what I would put in. I mean, joy, anger, fear, and sadness, obviously, are, like, big ones. Yeah. Disgust is like a weird one to put in there, but it covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, they kind of use it weirdly too. Like at the beginning, it makes sense because she's like disgusted as a baby eating broccoli. But like throughout, yeah. Like later on in the movie, it kind of like, I don't really know what the point is there. Here's a few other options that they were considering. Let me know if any of these would be better. Surprise. That's not good.
Doesn't make any sense, really.
Pride, which I think might have worked. and trust.
Yeah. I don't trust is like an emotion.
Yeah, those are weird. I mean, that's why they canned them. I feel like you could have maybe swapped disgust for pride. Maybe got a similar reaction.
Yeah, and then... Because I couldn't tell because it was either, like... Yeah, it was a lot of... I don't know. I like Mindy Kaling, though.
Do love Mindy Kaling.
But... Yeah.
With you on that.
Do you not like Mindy Kaling?
No, I do. I just said I do.
Oh.
I was agreeing with you.
Oh, I thought you were questioning me.
No, is it an inquisitive tone?
Was your disgust module acting up?
What I think was weird is that, like, I think fear and disgust kind of have too much of an overlap here. Right? Like, she could have just been, like, afraid of broccoli.
Yeah, because you don't know what it is. It smells weird.
Smells weird, yeah. And even later on, when she's in... We're jumping ahead, but when she's in, like, her fear area, I think broccoli's in there. So it is, like, a fear. But I guess, whatever. You needed 5 for a nice round number, and you got to get some great Mindy Kaling in there. So it's fine.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's also weird because the movie posits that, like, everything you do is dependent on little people running around in your brain, which is kind of true, but it's I know it's a movie.
Is it true? Wait, what do you mean?
Like, all those things are functions in your brain, but, like, I don't think it's like causation versus like they all kind of play a part, which I guess they kind of get to at the end, but anyway.
Well, what I do think they did well is that these, like, emotions, they, you have to remember that they're the emotions of an 11-year-old girl. So it's not like they're the same emotions that would be in an adult's brain, so they wouldn't necessarily act the same, like, as characters. Does that make sense?
That's true.
Explain that well. So yeah, so it's like, it's the joy of an 11-year-old girl. It's the anger of an 11-year-old girl. And I think that was pretty much represented really well by anger, actually, because it's just great hearing, like, Lewis Black get, like, mad at his mom and dad. He's like, what? Yeah. No dessert?
I mean, it pieces together well. Just it's...
I think it sets the table really well.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I mean, you can have your own opinion. That's fine.
No, I have sadness.
Sadness acting up. Sadness, nope. I think, was my favorite though. She was the funniest.
Yeah, I didn't really have a favorite. I think Bing Bong was my favorite.
Bong Bong.
Bong Bong.
So they start the movie kind of setting this, the table here with all this garbage, because it's a weird concept and it's a lot to kind of get your head around. But I do like not only the emotions but the kind of the structure they set up of the brain. So there's the 5 emotions in, like, the headquarters controlling everything, and then they're saving memories, which they then upload into the long-term memory or retain as the core memories, which then set the table for the personality islands, which forms the girl's personality.
Yeah.
Did you like how they kind of structured the brain? They could have gone, I mean, like, any direction they wanted, but the whole, like, island and headquarters thing, it's a pretty clever idea, I think.
Yeah, I liked it. And all the memory storage and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah, they're like little balls.
That was like
playing the videos of the memories.
Yeah.
It was well constructed. So kudos to them for taking a weird ass idea and framing it pretty well. And then, so the first movie kind of just setting that up first, 8 minutes or so. And then the actual plot starts in the family moving from Minnesota to terrible San Francisco. Garbage. I want to go back to Minnesota.
I also... I'm sorry. I just think I get frustrated with people from California, like, jerking themselves off about how great California is. And I feel like a little bit that's what this movie was about.
But it was kind of the opposite because she hated California.
But she wanted to go... Yeah, but her parents were like, this is the shit. Like, you gotta live here, dude.
I mean, it's better than Minnesota. I imagine.
Yeah, you're probably right. And it's probably cold as shit in Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, I do like...
That's why...
What's up?
I was gonna say, that's why she loves hockey.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I do like how they have, like, kind of... Those are some new things to the Pixar movie. Not only is it a female... protagonist, which I guess Brave was the only other one. She plays hockey, so she's kind of a tomboy. That's also outside of like the Disney scope, and she's from Minnesota, which is not, they don't get a lot of action there.
Yeah, I, you know what, it should have just been a Minnesota movie.
Removed from San Francisco to Minnesota, then she could have complained.
Yeah, it's cold here, Mom. I want to see that building with the triangles.
And the movie starts off like, it is noted in the trivia that there is no antagonist in this movie. So I guess the antagonist is really just the situation. And it's this girl moving to a new place, and she doesn't like a house that she's moving into. Even though, like, come on. It's a pretty nice house in, like, downtown San Francisco, so.
It like, really is. When she was upset, I'm like, that's, like, that house is probably worth, like, I don't know, millions.
It's a real house, actually. I should have looked up the values on that, but the only counter to that is that, again, this is all through the mind of an 11-year-old girl, so she just doesn't want to be moved to a new place, so she doesn't care that it's a very nice house in a very rich neighborhood, and we would all kill to live there.
Yeah.
And they move there because her dad's like a tech CEO or something.
I'm not really sure.
I guess they don't specify, but leave it open-ended.
But he's very, well, it's a white dude moving to San Francisco, so I imagine it has something to do with that.
Yeah, I guess that's a good reason.
She moves there. Yeah, he also doesn't know how to hire good movers because they keep like losing their stuff or whatever and can't nail down a time to deliver it.
Yeah, so how long did this movie take? It was only like a few days, right?
Yeah.
Because they move there, she's bummed out. And then she goes to school, which I imagine would be only like a day or two later. Yeah. And then this is where it starts. Starts getting crazy. Because during this process, it's very exciting. Joy is at the helm here. So all the memories, all the interactions are framed in a joyous way because Joy is trying to like make sure everything's happy all the time, but then sadness starts getting a little into it, a little handsy, and her touching these memory balls sends Riley into a sad spiral, so she cries on her first day of school, which I mean, I'm sure that happens. I cried on my first day of school.
You did?
I remember not wanting to go to school, for sure. When I was younger than she was, though.
Yeah. I mean, she did it during, like, the tell something about yourself speech, which is, like, the worst time to cry. Because you're setting, like, the tone for the rest of your tenure at the school.
You only get one first impression.
Yeah, and she just
really botches it. I never changed schools or moved at a volatile age, so I guess I don't quite know the same thing. But when I was young, I definitely did not want to go to school.
I went to a different school in second grade and then third grade.
Okay.
But I ain't cry. I just didn't talk to anybody.
Different school, or you moved to a different place?
I moved the first year, and then I was on a waiting list, so I went to public school for second grade, and then Catholic school for third grade.
Oh yeah, that Catholic school.
Yep.
Sets your priorities straight.
I mean, yeah, we only had one priest that molested people, so that's cool.
Oh, Jesus.
He left before I got there, so hell yeah.
Oh, there you go. All right, it's all in the past then.
Because he, like...
Definitely never happen again.
He was trying to, like, go on AIM and, like, he was trying to message a little kid, but it turned out to be a cop because, you know.
No.
Yikes.
Did they Chris Hansen him?
I don't know if they did. Hey, sit down. Have a seat.
Why don't you come sit down over here?
Yeah. Come on, sit down. Yeah. Chris Hansen. He's a saint. I hope.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a saint anymore.
Brought a lot of creeps to justice.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe.
So.
Yeah.
You want to talk more about?
No, I don't want to hypothesize anything. Let's go on.
So yeah, like I said, sadness is starting to corrupt these memories, and she almost corrupts the core memories, which is only like five or so core memories. And Joy freaks out because if she does that, she's afraid. Joy's afraid that that'll kind of just like set everything in. To a frame of sadness, which maybe makes sense because that's her job.
Yeah.
And in this process, Joy and Sadness get sucked out of the headquarters and sent all the way to long-term memory, I guess, just outside of the headquarters.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where they go. But this kind of starts the, as a wise man once described it, like Inky and Blinky go for a walk or something. Did you read that article Jared wrote?
I didn't. I should. Now it's a good one. It's a good name.
I don't know. It's Stinky and Blinky. Stinky and something. I don't know. His argument was that, I think this is when Moana came out, that like all Disney movies are basically just character A meets character B, and then they go for a walk to the destination, and that's the whole movie.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
And yeah, it's pretty true. I think a lot of people, not a lot of people, but some people gave this movie some crap for taking a really high concept and kind of boiling it down to that same process. But I think it's fine just because the setting of the brain is much more interesting.
Yeah. And they do some stuff good, like, or well, either way, I like how the short-term memories, the little memory balls in the headquarters, they get recorded daily, and they at night they like flush them out to long-term, which they don't know. But the hypothesis, I think, on memories is that that's how it works. Like short-term, when you sleep, it helps you store all your memories.
Yeah,
I thought that was cool. I also like because they're out for a walk. They're out in the memory fields, and. And there's people taking unnecessary memories, Bobby Moynihan and Paula Poundstone, and they're the forgetters, and they like just suck up memories that they don't think you need and throw them into the pit of despair.
Yeah, and I like the good joke they got out of that was like all her memories of phone numbers.
I think
Bobby's like, she doesn't need these, they're all on her phone. So yeah, that's accurate.
Pretty true. I only know three phone numbers. Well, four, because I know my own.
I think.
And they all predate cell phones.
I only know four, and two of which are just because my parents were cute and like had a word that they spelled out with their number.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty clever to do that. Maybe I should have tried to do that.
Can you like get like vanity numbers now? Is that possible? Can you choose a number?
Back then you could. I don't know. This was a long time ago they did that.
Yeah, I guess now it's probably a lot more difficult.
Possibly.
There's so many phones out there now.
Yes, too many phones clogging it up.
Well, they also got another good joke where they're like, oh, well, yeah, we keep taking this this gum jingle and we keep just sending it up for fun.
That was my favorite joke. Yeah. And then throughout, they just keep replaying that jingle. Definitely my favorite parts of this movie were, like, the world building and all, like, the little structure they gave to this world inside her brain.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all that.
Even, like, the geometries of the shelving units, like, look like what a brain looks like, sort of. Like, deconstructed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good touch. And then later they run into Bong Bong, her Riley's.
Yeah.
Her imaginary friend, and he tries to get them to the train of thought, which will bring them back to the headquarters. I thought that was clever too.
Yeah, cuz I mean, did you have a imaginary friend?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
not one that like I would be like, yeah, flim flam. <Whatever. laughs> I distinctly have a memory of, I think, trying to create imaginary friends after seeing it was like a thing that kids did from movies. Whether or not kids actually do it, I don't know. But it was unsuccessful.
Yeah, it's the thing. It's always in movies and stuff. I don't think I had one either. And I feel like I'm maladjusted because I don't have an imaginary friend.
I don't think kids really do that.
All right. Well, good.
I'm just going to chalk that up to another thing Hollywood's tried to peddle. So while joy and sadness are away, the other emotions are taking over the brain and don't do it very well.
No.
And I'll say this was another thing I did enjoy about the movie. Like, in certain moments of stress for the character Riley, they manifest that as like the emotions all like struggling for control of the main frame there, the big board. It's like, yeah, that's kind of a good way to represent it, is like you don't really know which emotion's taking over.
Yeah.
When you're in those times of stress, especially that age. So it is kind of like they're just fighting, competing for dominance there.
But then it also is weird because it's like, so if you're angry or if you like can't be happy for a while, like really like just can't find any joy, it means that the little joy person in your head just got lost somewhere and it's like trying to get back.
Well, that's kind of a funny way to frame it too, for like, I wonder if that would be helpful for like depressed people or not. Like what to no. Think like, oh, they'll be it probably fucks you up even more.
Yeah. Oh, my joy just got lost in the pit, so I guess I can't be happy ever again.
Come on, joy, get back here.
Yeah.
Go meet up with Bong Bong. The movie, another thing that they push is that, you know, her being 11 and they're traveling around her brain and her memories A lot of it is focused on, like, her forgetting childhood stuff. And, like, there's a lot of, like, construction going on where they're replacing her ideas and thoughts of as a child with more adult things.
Yeah.
Like, they knock down her castles, princess castles, and, like, stuffed animal shrines, and they replace it with, like, a fake boyfriend generator. Which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah. I also like they had the, where did they get like deconstructed? It was like the imagination zone or something.
Oh, they go into abstract thought.
Abstract thought, that's what it is.
That was an interesting part. Because I'm not really sure what they were. They said if they were trying to cut through and they thought if they stayed too long, they would just be lost forever.
Because it would be abstracted to the point where, like, you couldn't recognize them anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's trippy. Their emotions would be abstracted.
Yeah, it's like, too meta. I don't think it would work.
that part might have been stretching too far. But, I guess you gotta put abstract thought in there somewhere. Maybe you don't. I don't know. One question that came up, well, a couple questions came up, but at certain points, the emotions seem to be feeling other emotions. And my question was that, are these emotions capable? Are they supposed to be capable of other emotions? Are they supposed to be strictly staying in their lane? What would your answer be there?
That's a good point. Maybe it's just showing that, like, you never have, like, pure emotions. It's always a mixture of emotions.
Which I guess is the resolution, right?
Yeah, because then at the end, some of the core emotions are, like, multicolored instead of just joy-colored. So, like, showing, like, you know, you see old memories through multiple lenses, not just happy ones.
Yeah, they should have had nostalgia be an emotion. That'd be the most powerful one of all.
Yeah, because nostalgia is a fucking liar. That's why.
And it's in cahoots with a consumerism emotion.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yes, I will buy that Nintendo game for the fifth time on a fifth different system because I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Which I've done.
Hey. We all remember. That's why I bought Mario RPG like 7 times.
God, such a good game.
It is. Oh my god.
Now buy it 7 more.
Yeah. Until they make a goddamn sequel, which they were promising to do for years.
Well, I think that was Paper Mario.
Yeah, but Paper Mario, like...
That's the best you're gonna get.
It's so shitty compared to RPG. Like, it's,
I would have to agree. It's still good, but not as good.
It's good. It's just like they made it more kid-like instead of more like Final Fantasy-like, which is what I appreciated about it.
Speaking of
the secret Final Fantasy boss hidden in Mario RPG.
Yeah, they really crossed the streams there. In a good way.
Yeah.
But speaking of fantasies, I was trying to transition back to the movie.
Okay.
I think maybe my favorite part was the dream sequence. The reasoning behind why they go into dreams is a little iffy, because I guess when the girl's asleep, they can't travel on the train of thought because it stops because she's sleeping, which, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I guess they could just wait for her to wake up again. Like, nothing's going to really happen between now and then, but whatever. So their thought is that they have to then wake up Riley. So they kind of storm the dream portion of her brain, which is kind of like a movie set, which I thought was pretty clever.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was funny that those little, because all the people, all like the brain people besides the emotions are all like the brain workers are all like mm-hmm. little jelly bean people.
Yeah,
but they hit
pretty
up the
cute. All the character design was pretty good.
Yeah, they hit up all like the good, like they had movie posters outside like the studios that were like falling or like what was the other one? It was falling. It was, they also hit on the on, like, having no pants in your dream at school trope, which I thought was good. All the classic ones.
Yeah, there's I can fly.
I can fly.
Something is
yeah.
chasing me. I'm falling for a very long time into a pit. Yeah. Was the other one, which was based on the Vertigo poster from Hitchcock. Yeah, and then I really like the dream because they're like acting it out in the brain with like the little jelly bean people, but then they put the filter on it so that it to her looks like the people she knew in real life.
Yeah.
And then they disrupt it and like they're like a, I like just the dog and then the dog gets cut in half and just half the dog barking around.
And they
I appreciate that.
They scare her awake.
Yeah, and they finally do it by unlocking the big spooky clown.
Ooh.
Which yeah, that'd wake anybody up.
Yeah, he's in the subconscious.
Yeah, which is guarded by Frank Oz and some other guy. So yeah, and they have to go like down underground to the. It's very clever, very well put out, put together.
Hit up all those good brain words.
Yeah, they really marked all the brain words. Can't even think of any they missed. They even early on do a brain freeze.
Oh yeah.
A real missed opportunity was the brain fart.
Oh, that would have been, that's very, like, up their alley, I feel like.
Yeah, just like a scene where she's in class, and then they ask her a question that she knows, and all the emotions are like, come on, you know this, and then just, like, a big fart. Yeah, that'd be so funny.
Like, oh no, brain fart.
That's so stupid.
I think it would have been great.
Could have worked. So they get her awake, joy and sadness do, and then they're heading back on their way to the headquarters on the train, but then I guess it's tied to one of those islands, personality islands.
Yeah.
And that crashes. She loses another one, and then it crashes, and then whatever, they all, Joy and Bing Bong, fall into the...
The pit.
I always laugh at that.
Yeah. Gets you every
time. It's the memory dump, I think, not the pit of despair.
Whatever. It's all like the memories you don't remember.
Yeah, that's where they put the memories that aren't useful anymore, or I guess are too old, and then eventually they just disappear forever. So Joy and Bong Bong gotta get out of there. They'll be gone forever.
Yeah.
And even Bong Bong kind of gets a little Back to the Future-y, whereas like his hand starts to float away in the dust.
And he's like, "Doc,
he's forgotten."
Yeah,
this is heavy.
Yeah. Ooh la la, ooh la la,
ooh la la.
Yeah. Then he nobly sacrifices himself. Let Joy survive.
And this is where, yeah, what? No, keep going.
This is where what?
Well, I was gonna say, pretty much from this point on, it's kind of like, okay, I guess I just got to wrap up the movie, but it's not really like the most satisfying the way that they kind of get back to the headquarters, because I guess I was hoping they would just use some more clever brain tricks, you know, to get back. And even just if they just rode the train of thought back, I thought, I mean, that's clever enough. But I guess they needed one more like big, maybe they won't make it moment.
That's where they, like, it's weird because they, like, go back and forth between, like, things being kind of, like, representative to things being physically there.
Mm-hmm.
So they used the Boy of Your Dreams maker over, like 900,000 times to build a tower of dudes. And then she jettisons onto a big trampoline that happens to be on Family Island. And then catapults herself up. So, I mean...
And catches Sadness, who's on a cloud from the Cloud City, I guess.
Yeah.
It's very like, okay, this is some bullshit, whatever. We just gotta get it done.
They're in Cloud City, yeah. Lando. Chewbacca.
But... I guess I forgot to mention, I guess they have to get back soon because... the other emotion, anger, I think, actually was planted the idea of running away and going back to Minnesota where all the happy memories are made. So they're building that as I guess once that decision's finalized, I guess like she'll be like emotionally dead or something.
Yeah, that's because they took the core memories out and they're trying to bring them back because core memories make your personality. But, yeah, but that means, like, so she's going to be, like, a sociopath for the rest of her life because her core memories are gone? Like, there's a lot riding on this moment. Like, she's just not going to be a functional human being after this moment. Like.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of, I mean, I don't know. Did you ever run away as a kid or attempt to run away?
I didn't. I snuck out a lot. But I didn't run away, or I just didn't come home.
But, well, that's different. But you had the intention of eventually coming home.
Yeah. How about you?
So, you know, I ran away a few times.
Ah. But
it wasn't really ever a case where I actually thought I was never going back home. It was always, I'm pretty sure, like, I was aware that it was just a way for me to get attention. So maybe the purpose behind it is different from this kid, but I was definitely not emotionally dead in the process.
I mean, were you angry or afraid or disgusted when you ran away?
I remember, I think most of them were brought about in moments where my brother picked on me.
Oh.
Not to put it on him, because I'm sure he'd be listening.
He's an brother. Asshole.
But yeah, fuck him. It was like moments where I was like really embarrassed, I think. And I was like, fuck this, I'm out of here. I remember one time wasn't about my brother. I think I was just kind of like, I don't know, I guess not getting the love I wanted, the attention I wanted. It was all very intention-based.
Well, you're like...
And...
You're like the baby, though.
Yeah, so
you should have gotten all the attention.
I'm sure I did. I'm gonna also put some blame on Hollywood again because I feel like I remember seeing that idea play out, and I was like, "This looks kind of cool to run away."
God damn it, Hollywood! They're trying to inspire the next like good runaway story by making a bunch of kids run away, and one of them will have a great story about it.
They had just feeding themselves.
Yeah, it's a numbers game.
But also, I was never a young girl in this situation, so maybe it's accurate. You never know.
I mean,
the genesis of this idea was Pete Doctor's daughter, I guess, going through some similar issues. So maybe he had a firsthand look.
I'm sure she was happy that he made a movie about her emotional distress. Just with daughters.
Yeah, and framed her as a budding sociopath.
Yeah. Honey, we had no emotions.
You were driven by pure anger. So you were completely apathetic. Well, of course, yeah.
I was going to say, usually, like, I'm getting soft these days, but I really didn't get, like, emotional during this movie at all. Like,
yeah, or anything. Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I heard this was, like, a big cry movie. The way, you know, Up was in the beginning.
Oh, God, that's hard to match.
Yeah, I think that's the most. But, you know, another Pete Docter movie. But, yeah, a lot of people say this was a crime movie. But we're just such hard men.
I mean, yeah. Well, maybe if we were, like, if we were girls, we would get it more or something.
Yeah, that was the other question I was talking about earlier. I wonder how this movie would be framed as a boy, as the protagonist.
He'd probably
be like a lot less interesting.
He get like beat up at school, or like, I don't know, or like
there'd definitely be like a horniness emotion.
Yeah, that'd be like, well, there. I know. My favorite thing about this movie was all the other people's minds they go into.
Yeah,
like there's a boy that she like runs into, and he like can't handle it, and like doesn't know what to do. That's well, but that also makes me. Because I saw this in this, and then also in another movie recently, and it's in every movie, pretty much. But have you ever ran into a girl or, like, been in a situation where a girl talks to you and you can't talk? Like, you're just silent, just stare?
Not directly, like, they were talking to me and I, like, barfed. I definitely had a lot of awkward encounters. Moments where I would actively avoid girls in school hallways, so like, it's not far off.
But you never like just blank stared at someone and then just like,
no, I'm not an idiot.
That's another Hollywood thing, god damn it.
Yeah, get it right, Hollywood.
Like, because someone goes like, hey man, what's up, and it's a girl and they're like like, no one does that. No one's like that freaked out that they can't just go like, hey. Like, at least you say something.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, you'd probably say something that was stupid.
Yeah. I mean, most of what I say is stupid.
Like, hey, girl.
Yeah.
Fuck, that was stupid. Why did I say that?
Hey, you beat.
They should have played that up, too, like the nagging memories. Like, when you're about to go to sleep and then you have a memory of, like, some really awkward thing you did, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah, like, yeah. Remember I shit you, like, myself on that bus?
Oh, yeah, we all remember.
Yeah. That's when you run away. That's when you leave town.
That's a very good reason to run away, kids.
Yeah, it's non-recoverable.
Yeah, embarrassment to that degree, you're never coming back from.
Embarrassment would have been a good emotion.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's like...
Especially in a... Because I think disgust kind of took that role on.
Yeah.
Maybe fear kind of took that role. And those are kind of tied together.
But
that's kind of the resolution, like we talked about earlier, that I guess the whole movie, Joy's trying to keep everything purely joy, but we realize that the emotions are more complex, and in this case, they thought sadness was only a bad influence, but it's useful in creating empathy. So when Riley gets emotionally overwhelmed, she needs help. I'm reading this all from Wikipedia. People around her come and help. And help her feel happy again.
I mean, yeah. Sadness has a important part.
Which I think is a good message. Journey.
Yeah. Although the way you said it makes it sound sociopathic. It's like, yes, act sad and you'll get empathy.
That's true. That was... I had a really hard time, like, writing down my thoughts on, like, the resolution of the movie and, like, the purpose of it. So I just cribbed from Wikipedia, and yeah, now that I read that, it does sound kind of almost mean-spirited.
Also, old Ratzenberger report.
Hey!
We got another minor role.
Thrown it at the very end.
Yeah.
After Riley gets back and they make up with the parents and they're all like, well, whatever. Yeah, they kind of jump ahead a little bit and they install a new mother... What the fuck would you call it? Motherboard? That's not right.
Like a switchboard? Control board?
Switchboard? Control panel? Control, yeah. A more complex control board with more emotions, which I thought was also a clever touch.
Yeah.
And the person who installs it is John Ratzenberg.
As a jelly.
He would have been a good... He would be the only... Well... And maybe... I don't think he'd be a good anchor. I was going to say he'd be a good anchor, but...
He'd be a good, like... I don't know.
He should have been Bon Bon.
He
would have been...
He would have been a good... If, like, sarcasm was an emotion.
Now, I thought we almost had the impossible double Ratzenberger. Because, I don't know if you remember, when they're in the Cloud City, and, like, they take, a chunk out of the Cloud's house, and he comes outside, and he's like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
I thought that was Ratzenberger.
So did I, but I don't think that is him.
It's not. At least it's not credited. But no, I'm pretty sure it's not. He's only listed as Fritz, the construction worker. So I almost lost my shit if we had double Ratzenberger.
I mean, I'd be happy about that for sure. That was like a Ratzenberger, like, double take.
We'll give it a 1.5 Ratzenbergers.
Yeah.
But overall, another, what, just pathetic lack of usage.
Yeah, you have him at your disposal. He needs work.
He's not doing anything.
Yes. They haven't decided to reboot Cheers yet, so we're good on that. Although they'll get there, because I don't know if you heard, they're making new Roseannes for whatever fucking reason.
Yeah, that's right. We just gotta convince them to make a new Frasier, and then we can then do the reverse spinoff and have a spinoff of Cheers again.
Oh yeah, Frasier can like move back to Boston.
Oh, that's a great idea. Just do like a double show where it's like Frasier and Cheers in the same show.
I mean, what's his face? What's his name? The main character in Cheers.
Ted Danson?
Ted Danson. He's still working. He has that new show that about being in hell.
Yeah. And it's a good show, and he's good in it.
Yeah.
Woody Harrelson's still working. Is George Wendt still alive?
He's normal.
God, I hope so. Yeah.
I had a really mean thought, but...
You save it. Yeah, he's still alive.
Okay.
He's 69. Nice.
Hell yeah. And...
Wait, his nephew is Jason Sudeikis. What?
What?
Wow.
Jason Sudeikis...
Sister is Catherine Sudeikis.
As Ted Danson would be good.
Yeah, he could fill in that role.
We just need another Rhea Perlman. Tough one. Is Rhea Perlman?
She what?
I said she's a tough role to fill.
Is she dead?
No.
Oh, okay. She's also 69.
Yeah. She is?
Yeah. They could bring the whole cast back. Let's do it.
I mean, literally, that's what they're doing with the Roseanne. They're like, same cast, same place, just picking up.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they did for Will and Grace, too. I think the problem is Cheers is, like, just behind that nostalgia. I don't think our generation cares as much about Cheers as they do about Will and Grace or fucking Roseanne.
That's true.
I don't give a shit.
I mean, I do because I'm watching it right now, but that's the only reason.
I watched it last night too.
It's good.
It's a good going to sleep show.
Everybody knows your name. That
it's nice. It's a warm hug.
I remember that theme song because my dad used to watch it. So I remember hearing that as I was falling asleep. So it's like I have memories about that song. But
there you go. That song would be one of your personality islands.
It would. Cheers song.
The Cheers Island. So yeah, I think we could wrap it up here.
Yeah.
Any like overarching final thoughts here?
You know, just have emotions. Don't be a sociopath.
Yeah, it's a good message. Embrace your emotions. Embrace the complexity of emotions.
Go through puberty. Happy. You know.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're unsure if you should go through puberty, just do it.
Do it. It's worth it.
It's worth it.
It'd be a tough come out years, better in the end. Yeah.
I wrote a lot of fucking trivia here. I wonder if any of it's actually important. Oh, I did like... So Riley's chief emotion is joy. But then the mom's is sadness. And the dad's is anger.
There's so also... That's interesting. When they're clipping to, like, at the end, they cut to, like, a bunch of people and their emotions in their head. And there's a truck driver or a bus driver. There's a bus driver. And all his emotions are anger.
Yeah. That was interesting. I wondered.
I think it's
kind of opens the.
We'll dig at, like, at bus drivers, but.
Yeah, it's a hard job, man.
Yeah. They're not angry. Just stand behind the goddamn line.
But it was funny because they were all anger-shaped, but they were the colors of the other emotions. So maybe he's like angry joy. He's got like angry disgust. I don't know.
He did run away as a kid, so he never recovered.
Yeah, that's what happens to you. Also, at the end, she's like on the bus, and they're like about to go on the highway. She's like, stop the bus! Like, bus would not stop for you, kid.
No, they'd be like, shut the fuck up, kid. Get in the back.
On your way to Oakland.
Yeah, I've been on a Greyhound before. They do not care.
We're all just pissed off bus drivers.
Yeah.
Here's an early concept. These are always fun. Early concept was that 8-year-old girl is playing in the woods and gets knocked out by a branch, suffering short-term memory loss. And then the movie would focus on her memories, trying to get those, or her emotions, trying to get her memories back. But they thought it was too dark.
I mean, that is pretty dark. That's the season finale of Full House, isn't it? Yeah, she falls off a horse and gets amnesia.
I mean, that's like straight out of a soap opera.
Yeah, that would be really dark.
Yeah, I wondered though, do you think there's room to do a sequel? Think there's anywhere else they could go with this?
I think
concept. I think they got all the juice they could out of that.
As messy as it would be, I think, because they allude to puberty at the end. Like, what's puberty? And it's naturally it's a siren light, like it's like an emergency signal, which is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I'd say they could pull off a puberty version of this. I think I would appreciate that. I know it'd be like messy and you'd be careful about what you do, especially with a girl, but I feel like they could do it. I feel like it'd be funny.
Yeah, they could either pick up with the same character later on in life, or I wondered, like we were saying, if they could maybe try and do what's this, like a different kind of character? Maybe that's either true. A male character or just someone else completely, I guess.
Or her as a
even
parent.
Like a woman, like an older a parent, yeah. They could do that. But as of now, no sequels are in the works, so
bummer.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess you don't need like an emotion for a period or something. That like,
whoa.
Yeah, it'd be like messy.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, let's end this period of a podcast.
All right.
Not sure what we're doing next time, but we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Probably shorts, maybe. Probably
shorts. Yeah, we could do some feature related shorts, which are like extras, like DVD extras and shit. Whatever. Probably shorts though. So come back, tune in. Asterix R podcast. There's a Twitter. Rate, review, whatever.
Everything.
We love you. We respect you. Smell you later.
Bye. Bong bong.